Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and on the political right, Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
Nice to see you, Dan. And on the political left, we have today Senator Derek Kitchen.
Thanks for having me.
Derek, so good to have you in the studio. Tell the audience real quickly the area you represent and how new you are to this job of being a senator. Some people know you as a city council person.
So I was elected to the Utah State Senate in November of 2018, last year, and took office officially in January and just wrapped up my first term, or my first legislative session, which was exciting, and I learned a great deal. And the area that I represent is all of downtown Salt Lake. I have the avenues Capitol Hill all the way up Immigration Canyon, so it's a nice chunk of Salt Lake City.
What an area. Yeah, well, we're so happy to have you on the program, and we'll try to have a lively conversation about some issues. And I want to start out 1 week out on the Mueller report. When we talked about this last week, Dan, we didn't know what was being released. But here it comes out, and it has not many redactions. It gets a really hard review from Senator Mitt Romney. And I'm just going to read what he said. Romney said, "I am sickened at the extent and pervasiveness of dishonesty and misdirection by individuals in the highest office of the land." And then at the same time, we had, you know, Senator Mike Lee, representing the same state, basically say, "There's nothing in this report that changes my view of this president." Quick reaction, Dan, and then we'll ask Derek.
Well, did they say anything different from one another?
I get your point. So give us.
Okay, so if you listen to the nuance, so Lee is not saying he's not also sickened by the pervasiveness of dishonesty.
He's saying nothing changes his view.
He's just saying nothing changes my view, which just shows like Lee is probably a little more experienced in walking the fine balance of executive authority as a legislator, and Senator Romney isn't, right?
Yeah.
So he's got a little bit to learn there from the statesman is being taught how to be statesmanly.
All right. But in the political center, I'm going to say kudos to Mitt Romney for standing up for the principles of this country.
Wait a second.
And being willing to take him on.
Okay. But you always give me a hard time. And people that don't know this, this is our insider talk. Natalie does give me every once in a while, like, you know, McKay, you really shouldn't say something so strongly. You really ought to have a more nuanced approach,
a
better filter,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
Okay. And I'm just going to throw this back
That's
at Natalie
good.
And say, does this help anyone, what Mitt Romney said?
Yeah. Derek,
get
us out of
it. No, you're not saying
well, I will.
Out of this.
Let's get Derek in the conversation. Then I'm going to respond to that because, you know, filters have different size holes. And
I'm down with this.
Okay,
go
ahead, Derek.
I'm looking for the nuance.
What's your reaction?
Well, you know, this the Mueller report had a very narrow question, and I think we were all sort of on both ends. We were whipping ourselves up to get emotional and get preemptively defensive or prosecutorial, maybe let's say on the left, right? At the end of the day, we had more than 24 indictments, and it clearly shows that the president
None for collusion with Russia, by the way.
Sure, but we discovered a lot of bad intentions and discovered that the president. It affirmed my opinion, which is that he's a bad actor and not serving the country in our best interest. So at the end of the day, I think that we got enough information out of it to move on and to give us some fodder for conversation in the 2020 election.
Yeah.
So basically, you agree with Senator Lee that this report didn't change your view of the president.
I don't think it changed many people's view.
I think Mike Lee said the right thing.
Yeah.
So tell me how Mitt Romney's quote doesn't help him and hurt Utah.
Yeah.
This is the interesting. This is
yeah, and
my little needle with this whole issue.
Yeah. You know, I guess the comment I would make is I was really happy when I read Senator Romney's comment because he started out by saying, "I'm glad we have avoided a constitutional crisis." You know, essentially said that it would be really hard if there was, you know, straight out collusion and we have to go remove this person from office. That is a crisis.
Yeah.
And then he said, but I got to tell you, you know, this is wrong. And I'll just read a little bit more from his quote. He said, "I am also appalled that among other things, fellow citizens working in a campaign for president welcomed help from Russia, including information that had been illegally obtained, that none of them acted to inform American law enforcement, and that the campaign chairman was actively promoting Russian interests in Ukraine." I think that is statesmanlike, Dan, to call it what it is.
Okay.
So my filter, I liked it.
Yeah. I think that what people – and this goes to my point with the Mueller report is everyone saw exactly what they already thought about President Trump in the Mueller report. It is the ultimate Rorschach test for politics at the moment. Everyone looks at the report and says, I see evil, or I see a hero, or I see, you know, I'm sickened by the report. And I think Senator Romney's doing a great job. Take nothing away from that. But I look at his comment, and I'm trying to figure out how it serves Utah, what he said.
Yeah.
That's my only – and I will constantly evaluate Senator Romney based on – now, to your point, and you know, if I drone on too long, go ahead and cut me off, which you should probably do at some point. But to your point, and I think Mitt Romney does fill this role well.
He's the only one who can fill it.
He gets to be the conscience for the national party.
Yes.
And I think in that way, he does serve that role.
Yeah.
So
fair enough.
I see the nuanced approach. Yeah. I just don't know what was accomplished.
Derek, in your world, we've got all these, you know, really talented challengers to President Trump on the Democratic side. And they're all coming in a little differently on the question of starting impeachment proceedings. Where do you sit with that, and what are you seeing in the candidates?
So I just watched the CNN town hall the other night, and it was really good for me to get energized about different candidates for totally different reasons. You know, I was not a big fan of Elizabeth Warren at first, but the more I read about her, for instance, I really appreciate her approach. And, you know, same goes for, you know, Buttigieg and Sanders, who sort of rubs me the wrong way sometimes, depending on my mood. But, you know,
there's a lot of contrast in those three, you know. And then if you add, is it Kamala Harris?
Who I really want to do well, but I'm still sort of waiting around for that to happen.
And Klobuchar, another interesting angle. But
so, you know, I think when it comes to impeachment, I want them to put the pressure on to sort of underscore some of the things, the evidence that we've seen in the Mueller report, and all of the misconduct that it illustrates. I think, you know, impeachment conversation helps us, again, highlight that. But at the end of the day, like I said, we have an election coming up in less than 2 years. So I would rather focus on beating Trump and this sort of approach to governing that he represents. I'd rather focus on beating that at the ballot box.
Yeah. Dan, your quick comments from the right on impeachment hearings. Yeah.
Oh,
tell us why.
Okay. Sorry. I was so excited, and I thought we were going to talk about candidates. Impeachment. That was so bad for the country, impeaching Bill Clinton. It was so bad. You look at the markets. You look at predictability of employment. You look at all across the country.
The strategy behind it being successful.
If the people do not like Donald Trump, they will have the opportunity to make this selection in a couple of years.
So Nancy Pelosi becomes really interesting.
Next year.
Nancy Pelosi becomes really interesting because she's obviously, you know, has to kind of lead her party in this regard. And who would ever have thought that she would be like the voice of reason, you know, from me, from a conservative, you know, on these issues? Derek, you like her style or something? Or,
you know, when
Derek rose his hand.
Yeah.
So.
You know, I like Nancy Pelosi. I was not polling for her when Democrats won last year. I did not think she should be the speaker. But now that I'm watching her perform, there's nothing quite like seeing a polished stateswoman out there doing
she's
the business.
She's doing something, isn't she?
And killing it. She is
she's
doing
killing it.
So well.
Dan, would you agree she's killing it? I mean, you don't have to agree with her ideologically. But Nancy Pelosi is like, you know.
She certainly does look like the adult in the room from the Democrat side.
Who
right
would have thought?
Yeah. Well, that
after
just shows
how
you
she
how,
has been scorned in campaigns in this state.
Certainly so, the grown up in the room.
Yeah. One last topic before we go to break. We have another potential presidential candidate who's postponed his visit. This is Howard Schultz, the Starbucks guy. Did either of you know any background on his visit or what he's got planned?
No, but I think what Schultz is learning, you know, everybody's, you know, I'm gonna start making a tour, and everybody announces their tour and they put it out there, right? And presidential candidates put their toe in the water, and some the pond is ice, and so their toe doesn't get in. Some the water's really, really cold, and they're like, yeah, I don't like cold water. And some are like, this is just right. So you look at the, I think there's 19 or 20, 25. I'm obviously exaggerating. Democratic candidates
but, I mean,
for president.
I mean, I could use a term. It's a matrix.
It is.
I mean, it's not like just a handful. It's
and you know, you've
rows
got,
and columns full of people.
Yeah, and you've got some clever, smart people that are running in that race, and so it's not like Schultz is going to step in and fill a void.
Yeah.
When you look at the litany of what is available, there is not much room left for a candidate to get in and say, I got an answer that none of these people are figuring out.
Yeah. And that's Derek, what makes him interesting, I think, in the whole political discussion is that he's saying he's going to run as an independent, in which case he would help Trump win.
Possibly.
If I understand. Yeah. Any comment on that? I mean, does this as a liberal, does this, kind of needle at you that he would come in and out of maybe arrogance or ego take votes away from Bernie Sanders or whoever the candidate might be?
You know, the Democrats really ruined it in 2016 when they had Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, and they forced Hillary Clinton to the front without, allowing, the debate and the process to really allow the right candidate to emerge. So mm-hmm. I'm just happy that in 2020 we have this, roster of candidates. There's somebody for everybody. And so I think, we could see somebody from the bottom sort of emerge just based on the way the math works. I don't think Howard Schultz has a snowball's chance at actually winning. Mm-hmm.
So he'll just add to the marketplace of ideas and fade away.
Probably.
Yeah, interesting. I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with Senator Derek Kitchen and Senator Dan McKay. In our next segment, we'll talk about some local news. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Derek Kitchen on the left.
And Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. And you are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Let's start by talking about the Salt Lake Temple, the sort of epicenter of our urban center, if you will. Our streets are planned out from it. It's going under a four-year renovation. I mean, 12 months, 18 months, but 4 years. And I just want to get a sense from both of you. We'll start with you, Derek, as a former Salt Lake City Council person. What will this mean to the city and the state? And of course, I'm meaning, you have people that come to visit. You have people that come to use it. You have another major construction in a major part of our city. How are you seeing this?
So this is right in the middle of my district, and the LDS Temple is a huge draw, especially around the holidays. And right now, springtime, the flowers are gorgeous, so you're seeing a lot of people come downtown just to visit the grounds. I don't think that the four-year renovation will have that big an impact on, our downtown economy, because most people can't go into the temple, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I don't imagine that there will be a true impact negatively. It's great to see that they're making investments in their property. More importantly, I see the LDS Church making a big investment around the corner with the new tower right next to the downtown.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. So this is Tower 8, yep. and they've broken ground. There's construction crews there today.
It's exciting,
Corner of State Street and First South.
Exactly, right next to downtown Harmon's. And, there's going to be a lot of construction downtown. There's another project coming online just a block south. The city has some stuff in the works. So I think that those types of developments are going to have more of a direct impact in the city than the renovation of the Mormon temple.
Dan, your comments, and you work downtown and are in real estate as a profession, even employed, I guess, by the LDS Church in real estate. Mm-hmm. So how are you seeing this?
It's a big deal.
Is it? It is a big deal.
I would say this.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be if it's 4 years.
When you think about the undertaking of, this building, 1800s, the base, the structural supports are 40 feet wide mm-hmm. for this building. And when you think about the cost, when you think about all of the construction workers that jobs are going to be employed to do this work, mm-hmm. and then the pinnacle of this will be a rededication of the temple. But before that, in Derek, you're going to have visitors from all over the world want to come and tour a building that hasn't been open to the public since the 1800s.
This is an interesting point. Okay, so let's just break that down for a little bit. So to enter an LDS temple, you need a recommend from your ecclesiastical leader.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But when it is decommissioned, it becomes just like any other
building. And it makes sense to do that if you think about it. When the temple is dedicated or it is a temple, if you don't have a recommend, you can't go in. Well, it severely limits, just think about it rationally.
Yeah.
It severely limits your ability for workers to go in. And you'd hate to say, well, the finest craftsman in whatever trade it might be
isn't
able to do it.
So with it being renovated, there'll be a period of time where they'll open it up to the world and say, come see. There's nothing mysterious here. Go to any room you want. Come see.
Yeah. And there will be tours. One place I've never been in the temple is the Grand Assembly Hall.
In the 4 years, there'll be like 3 months of it that are this.
Yes. And that's and that's the part I don't think people really – the construction will be somewhat disruptive downtown, but I think for the most part, it the Temple Square, you got two blocks there. That real estate is enough to mostly contain most of the traffic. Main Street already is closed, fortunately. Thank you, Rocky. Main Street's already closed, and as a result, you know, I think there will be limitations on interruptions of traffic. That said – that open house, that open, that ability for the Salt Lake Temple to be open for the world to see, and for the LDS Church to be really to play a host, because the church does a lot of things really well, but one of them they do really well is hosting people and bringing mm-hmm. people from all over the world. I am personally excited about the goodwill that comes from Temple Open Houses. This is a huge win for the community, even though the community may not know it yet.
Yeah, very good. You heard it here first on Both Sides of the Aisle. Any follow-up to that, Derek?
I'm excited to see the temple when it's done. I'll definitely take a tour, but I would encourage you not to oversell the impact here. This is a one-time thing.
It'll be cool.
But we lost Outdoor Retailer, which would have been an annual sort of impact to our downtown. There's a lot of things that we could have been doing that would have had a greater impact in our city.
Fair enough. That's the left and right coming out.
No way. That temple disappears. It is a much greater economic impact all day long.
Hey, man, I'm not advocating for it to go anywhere.
Hey, just on this point, just since we're staying with the city issue, and then we'll go to some other things outside the city, but Salt Lake City mayoral race, starting to see signs. Quick commentary there, and I'll just say from my perspective, I am so happy to see such a talented group of people.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of – Derek and I were talking off the air.
Derek's in a tough spot. It's like all his friends.
All my buddies are running.
Well, and they all have a little – you know, some differences about them. Yeah. And so there's a lot of choice. Give us a quick rundown of how you're seeing it, Derek.
I think I'm the only one among the three of us here who actually lives in the city.
Correct.
Is that right?
I live in Murray, and we got a Riverton resident there.
But, you know, downtown is for everybody. So I think that, this race will impact the whole state of Utah. I was surprised when Jackie decided not to run. I thought for sure she had put up a good fight this year. Obviously, when she bowed out, it opened the floodgates for other candidates. So, you know, we've got 10 people running.
Wow.
I think it's great for the conversation. It's a conversation, politically speaking, that we didn't have 4 years ago when it was just Jackie and Ralph. So, you know,
we've got male, female, gay, straight, racial and ethnic diversity. I mean, it's a pretty...
You know, from an identity standpoint, there's a lot of people that represent different communities, and I think that that's really exciting for Salt Lake City because we are so diverse, right? But more importantly for me, what I'm excited about is the real policy conversation that we're going to be able to have. You have two former city council members, one former council member and one current council member. Mm-hmm. You have
both who have been chairs.
Both have been chairs. Yeah. Erin has done a great job recently with things like the inland port, so she knows the big issues right now. Luz Escamilla coming from the state, you know, she understands policy at the state level. Mm-hmm. Jim DeBacchus, you know, big personality, lots to offer in that sense. So it'll be a really dynamic race.
Yeah, really fun. And issues will be from everything from affordable housing to air quality to, you know, economic development,
transportation.
Yeah. Dan, anything from your perspective?
Hey, municipal elections are always an interesting show. I love that. You know, Senator Kitchen thinks it will be a policy-oriented conversation. My impression of municipal races is that they're rarely about policy. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, it generally comes down to, and I've said this before, I think running a city is different than running a state. I think running a city is different than running, you know, in the legislature. I think all those things is just different. It requires different personality, that whole deal. And I think for the most part it always comes down to who offers more Coke in the milk in the water fountain than actual policy. But I could be wrong. But usually when the Democrats, I saw this meme. It was all the presidential candidates. And here's the thing that each candidate offers you, and you can choose based on what it is, right? And of course the culmination was Bernie's offers you everything, right?
Yeah,
the
there you go.
Paid for it. But it will be. I love this about Salt Lake City races because it does. The soda in the water fountains is much more tasty during the election.
Yeah, interesting.
So this is Salt Lake City, so we're talking about 4.0 beer in the water fountain, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Hey, I can't help with two state senators in the studio with me. I want to talk about this potential veto override session. So Governor Herbert's had a few vetoes. He's got another one that's being looked at. This is SB 123 that deals with replacing members of Congress who leave office midterm. Does the party get to decide? Can you get on the ballot using signatures? Dan, this is your legislation. You know a ton about it. without going into, you know, all of that, how likely is it that we have a veto override session? My understanding is that the leadership is polling this week.
That's my understanding as well.
Have you been polled? Either of you been polled?
I have been polled.
And when you're polled, it's both Republicans and Democrats polled. And
yep.
And what is and how will they make a decision? So you have 104 in the legislature. What is the tipping point to have a session?
Well, the House needs 50
I can do
votes.
The math, but I just want
the House needs 50 votes, and the Senate needs 20.
Because it has to be two-thirds.
It has to be two-thirds.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the Democratic caucus is going to let the Republican caucus fight this out by themselves.
Is that how you feel, Derek?
The Democrats feel like at the end of the day, the governor should make the decision on how the process should work. I'm just needling Derek. Because I know that's not how he feels. I made a huge mistake during the session, and I will forever have that problem. I should have fixed something that Derek asked me to fix about this issue, but I didn't.
Well, we were on the conference committee together for this issue, and so this was my first. This was my first.
Just
session.
Explain to our listeners what a conference committee is, just because it's interesting.
So when a bill passes the House in one form and the Senate in another form, and neither want to back off of their changes, you call a conference committee.
The leadership picks people, right?
Speaker and president puts them together. And what I have always done in conference committees is I have always tried to choose new people. And the reason I do that when the president asks you who to be on the conference committee is because you never know when it's going to be your bill that's in a conference committee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I always try and make sure that new people especially are going to these conference committees because if it's their bill, they need to know how it's done and learn from the mistakes.
They send you
to
the conference because you're a sponsor.
And the sponsor is the chair of the committee.
Okay, and Derek, why did you get chosen? Just because the president thought you had a lot to offer?
I think it's because I was new. It's an issue that matters to Democrats just as much as to Republicans. So,
well, and Derek's a good head on all of these issues.
Uh-huh.
And for anybody that listens to our show, I know our listeners are mostly downtown, but I'll put in this plug for Derek. He is a very thoughtful lawmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that if we were going to try and find something that can build consensus, and having him involved is going to help.
And the Senate president
recognized
that. Yeah, nice. Well done, Derek.
But it was good experience for me, and I appreciate the opportunity. But it was marked with frustration for sure. Just the process itself is a little bit imbalanced. You know, when it comes to veto override, the Democrats, we don't have the numbers. So the Republicans can override the veto without a single Democratic vote. So I think that by itself illustrates the problems in our political system in the state of Utah. So you come down
on the side of needing more Democrats in the legislature?
For sure. For sure.
Totally blows my mind.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming.
More balance, I think, is good, right?
Okay.
And I think that the voters in the whole state of Utah will be better served.
So, quick prediction, Dan, do you think a veto override happens and will it be successful?
I'm too close to the issue.
Okay.
Let Derek make the call.
I haven't been polled this week,
but
a couple weeks ago I was polled and I gave it a thumbs down on the veto override. We'll see. I honestly don't know where everybody's at, but the fact that the speaker and the president are pushing for this makes me think that they'll call us. They will get what they want if they can pull together the override session.
I'm going to predict that it doesn't have the votes. That it just moves on. So we'll see. We always get that accountability here on both sides of the aisle. It's time for us to go to gripes, but just as we do that, frustration over UDOT finding $451 million in savings.
Why should there be no frustration?
Yeah, no. On the one hand, it should be like, wow, this is great. But on the other hand, people are asking, why is that much money there available to skim off the top?
You have to, when you have as many projects as UDOT has going on, there is a lot of money involved, right? And when you're talking about billions, which is UDOT's, over $4 billion as they're trying to put together the transportation impact funds, the TIF dollars, we're talking about 10% or less.
Transportation investment fund.
Investment fund. But you're talking about, when you're talking about this, the TIF money, you're talking about less than 10%. And so they've got a 10% savings, which means at the end of the day, and everybody looks at this maybe as a negative, but I look at it as a positive. That means that UDOT didn't use the contingency that is planned into every construction project. That means we're getting stuff on time, on cost, and on quality. That's great.
Yeah. Derek, any quick comments? And then we'll come back to you, Dan, for a really quick gripe.
I love agreeing with you, Dan. but I agree. I think, the fact that UDOT has calculated the contingency, 10, 15%, whatever it is, and they didn't go over that, and now they can redirect resources, that's a good thing for me.
Dan, your quick gripe.
Okay, my gripe, just because Senator Kitchens is here, I was going to gripe it myself.
Okay.
What I'm learning about bills and about all kinds of things is everybody's better when everybody has a say during the session. I worried about time more than I worried about something else in a bill. So I'm just griping at myself because I think I could have made a bill better with Senator Kitchen's involvement. So here we are.
Well, that's a nice admission. Quick gripe.
You know, I would say these ballot initiatives and what happened this last session and in the special session back in December on cannabis, I'm frustrated with the process and the fact that, you know, voters by and large are feeling very swept to the side and not respected. So that's a gripe of mine.
Thank you, Derek. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Derek Kitchen and Dan McKay. Program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.